sure that they're going to be updated.
Don't sound
this year.
That convinced, Helen. But anyway, listen, thank you. Thank you very much indeed for your time. Helen Ward, highlights of the game shown on the Women's Football Show, by the way, 11:30 on BBC One. Thank you, Felice.
Thank you, Chris.
And thank you for your company as well. Stay with us. Colin Murray's up next.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 10 o'clock. This is Anthony Birchley. The Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, has defended a number of gifts given to the Labour leadership, insisting the system for donations is transparent. She denies breaking parliamentary rules while staying in an apartment belonging to the Labour donor Lord Ali during a holiday in New York. There have also been questions about clothes given to Ms Rayner and Sir Keir Starmer by the peer, who was given a Downing Street security pass despite not having a government role. Speaking on Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, Ms Rayner said she understood people were upset.
I get that people are frustrated, in particular the circumstances that we're in. Yeah. But donations for gifts and hospitality and, you know, monetary donations have been a feature of our politics for a very long time. People can look it up and can see what people have had donations for, and the transparency is really important.
The Crown Prosecution Service says it considered bringing charges against the former Harrods owner, Mohammed Al-Fayed, twice. The CPS says on both occasions it concluded there was no realistic prospect of a conviction. Dozens of women have come forward with allegations of being sexually assaulted or raped by the billionaire who died last year. Israel has come under attack from a barrage of about 100 rockets fired by Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hugo Bechega reports from Beirut.
The attacks from Hezbollah come after major blows for the group, including an Israeli strike in Beirut that decimated the chain of command of its elite fighting unit. Air raid sirens blared across northern Israel as rockets flew deeper into the country's territory. Hezbollah said one of its targets was an Israeli military production facility in the city of Haifa, and that this was an initial retaliation for the explosions targeting the group's communication devices. In response, the Israeli army said it was striking Hezbollah targets in Lebanon and that its attacks would continue and intensify.
Veterans and members of the armed forces will be joined by the Princess Royal at the Oosterbeek Cemetery in the Netherlands today to commemorate the 80th anniversary of Operation Market Garden. In 1944, thousands of Allied troops parachuted into Nazi-occupied territory with the aim of securing crucial bridges over the River Rhine. They failed and suffered heavy losses. The British boxer Daniel Dubois has retained his IBF World Heavyweight title, knocking out the two-time champion Anthony Joshua. 96,000 fans watched the fight at Wembley Stadium. Dubois' father, Dave, said he always had faith in his son.
I'm so proud to be a part of something as mega as this. And I'm so proud that he delivered, as he said he was. He said he will knock him out. He did it in the fifth. So I always knew he could do it. And he's shown the world he's the real deal.
And the weather: outbreaks of showery rain across the south of England and eastern Wales with a risk of thunder for some, dry and sunny elsewhere. That's the latest BBC News. It's 3 minutes past ten.
I'm Kim Cattrall, and I want to tell you about my new podcast, a new audio drama telling the history of the CIA from the inside out.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
He's got to convince Congress to give him an open checkbook now.
America has suffered its worst domestic attack of the 20th century at Pearl Harbor.
How do we make contact with the NKGB?
Central Intelligence, starring me, Kim Cattrall, Ed Harris, and Johnny Flynn.
There's $50,000 in it for you if you say yes.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Colin Murray. BBC Radio 5 Live.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Colin Murray Show on 5 Live every Sunday morning, 10 until midday. And whether you're just beginning a lazy day of football and fun or picking yourself up after a big Saturday night out, if you're just hitting the road or maybe just hitting the sofa, it doesn't matter. This is the sportish Sunday morning start you do want in your life, believe me. And coming up today, so much. Our great football songbook at 10:30 enters its sixth week and from Leeds United last Sunday to Bristol Rovers this time around. The story of one of the most unlikely songs ever to become a terrace anthem, Leadbelly's Goodnight Irene, a song that goes back to the 1800s. The Rover story, we think, to the beginning of the 1950s. And Pat Nevin and I are joined by, well, he's always cooking on gas. It's Ian Holloway with us, player, manager, fan, of course, of Bristol Rovers. What a connection to that club. Now, after 11, we will hit the football preview big time. The Women's Super League's underway this weekend, and we have Arsenal's Kim Little joining us ahead of their Emirates clash with Man City. But, of course, up the road at the Etihad, it's the same two teams in the Premier League. So Paul Dickoff returns to the show to talk about that. So we've got like a Man City, Arsenal-Man City, blue and red double in the PL and WSL. So looking forward to that. I would describe it as an audacious production effort to pull that together. And if that's not enough, we finish the show with a proper Forest legend. They've had a great start to the season, that win over Liverpool last weekend. And they take that a really hard game today to Brighton. In the other Premier League fixture, they're also unbeaten, exactly the same record this season. So we asked Viv Anderson to come on, won the league and two European Cups under Clough and Taylor when he was almost still a babby. And thankfully he said yes. So the ledge is on the show today. But we begin with two stories. One, you're probably not expecting, the Sabudio World Cup today in Tunbridge Wells. But before that one, you're definitely expecting. We've got to kick off with this. A knockout night last night at Wembley. And this is how the big moment happened on Five Live.
And another right hand from Joshua. And a huge right uppercut. But during the course of an exchange, a blistering right hand has deposited Anthony Joshua on the canvas. A towel has come in from Ben Davison. And this contest is over. The conclusion of an absolutely extraordinary shootout in the heavyweight division here at the National Stadium is another heavyweight slugfest that will enter the annals of all-time back-and-forth encounters in the heavyweight division. And at the final bell, Daniel Dubois has made a successful first defense of the IBF heavyweight world title and has catapulted himself into the stratosphere of superstars beneath the stars here in Northwest London. The winner and still the IBF heavyweight champion of the world is Dynamite Daniel Dubois, dropping his man four times en route to a fifth round stoppage. What a shootout, what a contest. Daniel Dubois victorious.
What a great piece of commentary that is, by the way, from Five Live Boxing, headed to Wembley at short notice when they got the rights. And that is, in the moment of what was happening, also putting it into historical context and then looking forward after what Daniel Dubois managed to do. That is not easy to do, live and unscripted. Absolutely sensational. That's why I wanted to play that whole minute and a half. To digest all of that with us, we're delighted to welcome two guests to the programme. First of all, Olympic gold medalist and now the WBA, the IBO and the ring female welterweight world champion, the pride of Wales, Ellis James, is pulling over into a lay-by right now and floods of tears. Lauren Price is with me. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, are you right?
Yes, great. What a great morning to chat. And alongside, you know, one of only two men that can say, a lot of people said it would be three this morning. They were wrong. One of only two men can say they're beaten. Daniel Dubois, one of them, of course, Alexander Usyk. The other one, Joe Joyce. Morning, Joe.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Listen, let me get straight to it because I want both of your hot takes from the point of view of both fighters. But Joe, just quickly with you, who are you calling out this morning after that fight? You've got to be sitting looking at both of them and thinking, right, I'm sitting here now, talk to me. Who are you looking at?
Of course I'll call them both out, but, you know, definitely the rematch would be me against the bar. It'd be a great fight to run back considering I beat him.
And for Josh, well, we'll get to where Joshua goes next, whether that's you or not, but you would just tap Daniel on the shoulder, would you, and say, a little bit on you're riding high right now, you've just knocked out Anthony Joshua at a packed Wembley Stadium, a post-war record crowd for the boxing, but hey, I'm the little stain on your record, come and try and sort it out. You could goad him into that fight, I reckon, Joe.
Yeah, I think it'll be a great rematch. And obviously, congratulations to Dubois. That was a brilliant performance. He boxed like superb. He went straight to work, knew what he had to do, landed the big shots and got him in trouble. So yeah, hats off. But of course, like I did the business against him.
Yeah, and you're saying, okay, look, I'm your little blemish. Come and sort it out. We'll see what happens. Lauren, let's start with Daniel Dubois. From your absolute expert opinion, take me through how you appraise what he did last night at Wembley.
Yeah, he didn't do much wrong, to be honest. He come out from round one, put it straight on him, which he needed to do. I think before the fight, obviously, a lot of people were questioning Daniel's defence, but, you know, he seemed that he was working his jab well, and, you know, as soon as he landed that big shot on AJ in round one, I don't think AJ recovered after that. And as you've seen, as every round, he put the pressure on him, and he got him out there in the end and done the job well.
The thing is, Joe, he's a young and he's only 27 now and just turned 27. He's 24 fights in already, regardless of sort of the history between you two. He talked about he needed to legitimise himself as a world champion. Do you feel he did that last night?
Yeah, of course. He's coming of age, and he showed that he had, you know, he's fulfilling his potential. And I was super surprised that night, like how he dispatched of him so soon and landed the shots, and obviously went straight to work, and he was very confident walking into the arena, which I noticed.
Mm. How hard is it, Lauren, for him to go into a place that Josh has been before, that level, that size of crowd, that size of occasion, for Daniel to walk into that and handle it the way he did last night? You know what it means to walk into so many different arenas and so many different atmospheres, Lauren.
Yeah, you know, he would have been feeling the pressure, but even though, you know, he was the IBF champion, he obviously walked first, and AJ being, you know, the superstar heavyweight, I think Daniel would have gone into that, you know, believing in himself, even though a lot of people, you know, wrote him off to be the underdog. Like Joe said, you know, he come out in the ring walk and he looked, you know, confident, he looked excited, he looked focused, you know, the old walk and when he got in the ring. So yeah, I think, you know, that just comes down to his team behind him, his own belief, you know, I'm in a good camp, and, you know, believing in himself, knowing that I'm going to go out there and, you know, stick it on him, and it worked.
Joe, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Usyk's the absolute man for me. He's the GOAT. You know, we look at what he's done since he moved up to heavyweight. But where is that? As I said, Dubois got time on his side. That's one thing. Where does he sit now? Where do you put him in the heavy rate running order, if you like? Where should his eyes be?
Well,
Yeah, go ahead, Joe, and then Lauren, you pile in over the top. You come straight through. You forget the jab. You throw a haymaker after Joe weighs in on this. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, obviously after that performance, like, he can, you know, comfortably challenge the winner of the rematch with Fury Usyk potentially. So, yeah.
Do you see that as his clearest path forward, or would that be, as a certain song said, too much, too young? Does he need to go there, Lauren, yet?
I think it's a fight that makes sense, you know. For me, I think Dubois will give Usyk, you know, his hardest fight to date. So, like Joe said, you know, when Usyk boxed Fury in December, yeah, I can't see why not. After that performance last night, you know, he's going to be hungry. He's going to want to be chasing, you know, them other titles. So, yeah, definitely.
Do you know what I'd do, Lauren? I'd get Joshua back into the same size of arena. But because he wouldn't have been on the right end of the split. Now he would be, it's a business. He'd make an absolute fortune in a rematch there. But that brings us, Lauren, to the question, the big one, the £64 million question. Where's Anthony Joshua's career this morning, in your expert opinion?
Obviously, you know, it's an odd one. AJ, he's done fantastic stuff for not just British boxing, world boxing. You know, he's been a leader. And you heard what he said last night. He's a fighter. He wants to come again. And I think as long as, you know, you believe in yourself and you're driven and you're ambitious, then you can come again. And I'm sure he will. He obviously got a great team behind him in Ben Davison, and you know, that's up to them to see, you know, where he goes next and who he wants. I believe he can come again, most definitely.
Joe, do you share that opinion? You know, if you look at, listen, we don't get, and we don't know what it's like to step into that loneliest place in sport and get battered. So, you know, absolute no shade and nothing but respect for all he is. But you look at what the fans are saying this morning, vast majority are saying that, you know, where do you go? 34 years old now, and you look at those defeats in recent times. Joe, give me your hot take on Anthony Joshua as we talked this morning.
Well, you know, there's a lot of, I can't really talk because, you know, it's up to the boxer if they want to continue. But yeah, he's been offering at a long level, at the top level for a long time. So it's up to him, really. I think it will still fill up stadiums and, you know, I wouldn't mind challenging maybe.
Yeah. You make a good point and very self-aware of you to point that out. Of course, with recent defeats for you, your point is don't try and fight our fights for us. That's what you're saying, Joe, very politely. You're saying, hey, Col, know your place. And you're right to say it. In your mind, you could probably have a little bit of thinking roughly maybe being in the same place as Joshua and thinking, I know I've got that night in me coming up, that belief that it's coming up. So maybe it is the right fight for both of yous.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a big draw fight, like, everyone knows him, and it's like people still want to watch him against other names, myself included. So it's an entertainment sport, and you know, it really excites the fans with like great nights like that. Like I was inspired that being out in the arena there.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But Lauren, talk to me about, if you're Joshua and you're thinking a legacy at the moment, and again, no shade, I've a lot of time for him. But the two defeats to Usyk, you know, he hasn't fought Fury. As we talked this morning, he hasn't fought Wilder. So if you start looking at when history looks back at where he is, he hasn't really secured his place. He hasn't had that win that will be remembered forever. Am I being too harsh?
No, I think, you know, you've got a point. And, you know, I'll go as far as saying, you know, since he last lost to Usyk, I don't think he's fought that level of opponent since, apart from obviously stepping in there last night against a live opponent. Mm. So, you know, that is questionable. But like Joe said, you know, the name of AJ, people are still going to want to come out and watch him. And as a heavyweight, you know, there's massive fights out there. Like Joe said, himself against AJ, everyone's always spoke, you know, for so long over the years, AJ v Fury. So, you know, there's definitely big fights there for him, but I understand what you're saying, as in, you know, he hasn't had the Fury on his name to date yet.
Yeah, you're right. Look, and as well, time flies. 2017 was the Vladimir Klitschko fight. Povetkin was what? 2018, I'm going to say, roughly about this time of the year. I mean, we're sitting here now at the tail end of 2024. And he's, as I say, was he 34 now? But listen, just finally, Joe, the night belonged to Daniel Dubois. Talk me through how concussive he was last night. Did he surprise you? Even no matter what regard you hold him in, did he surprise you just how composed he was last night?
Yeah, I was looking at his face on the on the ring walk. He looked confident, and like, as soon as the bell rang, he went straight to work. So he was very confident in what he was set out to do, and you know, it's kind of like a coming of age that he's in there and he performed so well against, like, you know, a packed crowd of, like, was it 96,000 people in Wembley Stadium?
Yeah, it was brilliant. And just final word for Lauren. Here's the thing. Here's a little perverse view on it, and then we'll leave it at this. Let you get on with your Sunday mornings. Get your first cup of coffee in, or your first 10-mile run, or whatever you're planning on doing this morning. Lauren, here's the thing, and I've written about this before. I lost my patience with these matchups in the heavyweight division a long time ago. I haven't been looking at a Fury. I don't care what the media talk about. I've turned my back on Fury Joshua a year and a half ago in terms of that matchup 2 years ago because I'm sick of it on, off, you know what I mean? I think the Dubois win's great for the sport. I think it's great for the division that he did that last night. Just gives us a younger fighter in that mix now and a different conversation at least we can have rather than when are they going to fight each other? What age are they now? 86 years old. I feel like we might be having this conversation in 50 years from now, Lauren. So we can at least we can talk about Daniel Dubois now in that picture.
No, definitely, you know, he's British and why not? You know, he's exciting, he's in his prime, he's young, like Joe said, he's ambitious and he's excited. And to be fair, you know, to take my hat off to him, he'll get in there and fight anyone as well. So,
yeah
you know, it's exciting times for heavyweight boxing and especially, you know, British heavyweight boxing.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe, thank you so much. Lauren, thank you so much. Great start to the show. Enjoy your Sunday, both. Thank you to both of them. There you go. Joe had so many problems with his line today getting it sorted. So big up for him for sticking with that. Let's just say that the weigh-in didn't go well. The training wasn't great for that interview with Joe Joyce, but he delivered once he was on air, which is brilliant. Do you know what? What's going to, whatever happens with Daniel Dubois next, and this is a bit we don't often talk about outside of, you know, Five Live Boxing and the brilliant podcast. He's going to get paid. He's going to get paid whoever he fights next. Really is going to get weighed in. And that performance deserves it at last night. Now, while that was happening at Wembley, you don't have to travel that far to reach Tunbridge Wells, which, of course, is where it all started for the fantastic table football game Sabudio, which so many people, I would say roughly about 40 years and older, will remember with such fondness or indeed play to this day through the generations. It has come home. It's not real football, but Sabudio has come home to Tunbridge Wells where it all started. Now, it's all going off a four-day World Cup, but players are playing. You can't just grab them on the radio. Such a big day today. So we're delighted that the communications director of the English Sabudio Association and tournament host of the Sabudio World Cup, Stuart Grant, is here because there's nothing he doesn't know. Stuart, how are you?
I'm good, Colin. Thanks for joining me. Thanks good. For letting me on, mate. It's a really good time to join me because England are playing at the moment as well.
Yes, I'm so excited. We got a good 7 minutes here, so we don't need to rush this. So
brilliant.
So there's all different categories, team, individual, under 21 and on and on and on. So what's happening on the big day today? What's already started?
So the day today, this is the big day everyone waits for. It's the team event today. So in all the categories, the open category, the veterans category, the women's, the under 20s, under 16s and under 12s are all playing the team event today. This is the one that everybody wants to win, honestly. And it's running into the third round of games and it's already starting to get hyped. You'll probably hear in a minute someone let out a massive scream and a fist pump.
Let me just do this because I feel like the moment needs it. Sabutio, hi. Great, love it. So who's right? So is there loads of penalty shootout hurt for England in Sabutio? Does it reflect physical football? Because I think, is this the time it's going to happen for England? Or this, are you worried there's more hurt?
No, that's why we brought it home. Our best performance was in 2007. We had a gentleman finish second in the open category. We didn't fare too well yesterday in all categories. We went out generally at the quarters. But today's the day we've been looking forward to. There's some tough teams, but if the draw falls right, we can do well. We can do well in all categories. We're quite positive. But I'm not going to jinx it. I don't want to jinx it because they'll kill me.
Is there a father and son playing together for England this week?
Do you know what? I think there might be.
Yeah, there is. It's a lovely story. Just that they passed it down through the generations. But that's the thing, right? There it is. Did you hear in the background? What happened?
I don't know. That was over on the Belgium table.
Boo. Double boo. I don't know whether you can, I don't know whether you can dive in Sabudio, but it might be happening in that game. I think it might be happening. So what other home nations are qualified, or is it England just?
No. They're all here. The Scottish are here, the Welsh are here, the Northern Irish are here.
But what
the
are you wasting time talking about England for, Stuart? Get your act together. Right, how's everyone else doing?
Let's have a look. I'll have a walk around.
Yeah, so, walk around. Get tickets.
Walking around. So we've got on the Northern Irish are currently...
Come on. Green light already.
They're 4-0 down to Belgium.
Oh, come on.
They're 4-0 well, down. But they're trying.
Fix.
Right. the Irish, they're come 3-0 on. Down to France.
Ah, oh, come on, you boys in green. Get your act together. Come on.
The Welsh are 4-0 down to Italy. It's not going well with Scotland. I think Scotland look like they've got... Oh, no, they're all the way down there. Right, mate, I feel
go
like...
On, no, go on, no, go, go, because literally every home nation's getting absolutely running. Battered here.
There's 48 tables in this centre. It's a long run. All right, hang on.
That's so
Spain
funny.
Spain beating Australia, and then Singapore are beating Scotland 3-0.
Wow, so every Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, Scotland and Wales are losing by a minimum of 3-0 at the moment. But we're there. We're taking part. We're not there. Brazil, we're Northern Ireland. It's all the same to us. So the hope is on England. Who would you go, oh no, we've been... That's Northern Ireland.
That's the English. There we go again.
So what's the score in your game?
So we're 2-0 up now. I think that'll make it. Yes. That puts us 2-0 up, which is fantastic result. Yeah. Oh, 3-0, sorry, we missed one. 3-0.
Ah, we have this outside broadcast budget, a very modest one for this show. We really missed a trick not being in Tunbridge Wells
you
today.
You should have been here.
Yeah, because it's very hard to get something in our time as well. And that is perfect. So we must talk about next year because I'm absolutely loving this. Right, who would you hate to England to get drawn against now you try and bring Sabudio home?
We don't want to meet the Italians. The Italians are good.
Right.
We want to try and avoid the Maltese. The Maltese are good.
That's a fantastic, yes. Yeah, Greeks.
So in Malta, it shocks people. In Malta, it's an official sport. They're governed by their Olympic committee.
Oh, that's amazing.
In Malta, they get funding from their Olympic committee. But yeah, we'd like to miss the Italians, the Greeks, the Belgians. They're the good nations. Right. The Maltese as well.
So basically, England, you'd put as sort of the dark horses right now.
Yeah, so it's a... Look, people always look at us and think we're going to lose. We've got great players that travel around the world and play it, but it just never seems to happen in the major tournaments.
Yeah.
But it's home. This is that we've got a play. There we go. 4-0 now.
Go on, see. See, that's the momentum.
Having a great game over there.
So when we used to build it up when we were young, I mean, I didn't have much money to spend on it, so I would only have a few teams and you'd glue them back on if they broke.
I think
I had one stand. My ground looked non-league, right? But... What's it like? Is it just a straight up pitch and the players, or do you put stands around it? What do you do?
No, we've grown up. We don't play on the floor anymore. We've got nice, sophisticated tables. Remember the Astro pitch that came out?
Yes.
We've got a modern version of that, which is a gorgeous surface. It's a lovely surface where the players glide really fast. The games have evolved slightly, so the bases aren't as round anymore. So you can get lots of slide on it. All you need is two sets of goals, a pitch, and your players, and you're away.
The problem with Sabudio in the 80s is the pitches were often waterlogged and muddy, you know. But now with all of this amazing sort of maintenance of grounds and the under pitch heating, it's a better surface now. Some say the game's gone. Some say the game's gone. I think you've got a modernised.
People look at these modern bases and they're like, oh no, that's not proper Sabutio. These figures, it's like playing with a pair of modern day Predator boots and versus the old sort of black and white boots you played within the 80s. You know what I mean?
I love it. Listen, we got to go, but what I'll do, Stuart, I'm going to pass your deets on to the team here because surely we've got to get on this later and just find out whether England
fantastic.
Won the Sabutio
no,
World
no,
Cup.
Love to.
I'm sure everyone listening wants to keep up to date. Stuart Grant, thank you for painting a beautiful picture. And where is the next World Cup being held and when is it?
So the next one, it's in 2 years in France, the next one.
2 years, France. Brilliant. We can afford that. That's just a Eurostar.
We can get over there. We'll be over there.
Oh, mate, I think we can afford that. I love it. Brilliant. Thank you, mate. Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having
Take
me,
care.
Mate. Thank you.
Love that. You see, you're only as good as your guest, James, correct?
Yeah.
You're only as good as your guest. In Tunbridge Wells, the Sabudio World Cup, we learned so much in that period of time. We had goals going in. The Maltese have it as part of their Olympic committee. That's unbelievable,
Serious?
Sabudio. That's why they're there.
So I saw Mike Bushell on BBC Breakfast Telly having a game yesterday morning.
Yeah.
He'd played before.
Yeah, he brought game. Did game recognise his game?
He was good, exactly.
You see, the thing with that is, right, That makes sense if you're a small nation. This is where Northern Ireland have gone wrong. Malta have went, we ain't winning the 4x100 at the Olympics. We don't have four sprinters.
That's it. Stick to what you know.
Right, as we know our limit, we'll specialise in Saboudio. This is what we need to do in Northern Ireland. Although, of course, what we're doing in snooker and stuff is brilliant. We do have champions. But I'm just saying, pick a something like Connect Four. Mm-hmm. And fund it properly in a small nation. So listen, I don't know who's in charge of the Northern Ireland Sports Committee. Get on it, Kerplunk, Connect Four, Hungry Hippos. We need to put money into that because England aren't.
No.
Yeah, that's what Malta have done with Saboudio.
Yeah, whilst everyone else is sleeping, the Northern Irish are playing Kerplunk.
That was brilliant. He went round all the home nations, right? He went every table. Northern Ireland, 3-4-0 down. Republic of Ireland, 3-4-0 down. Scotland, 3-4-0 down. Wales, 3-4-0 down. We're rubbish. England were scoring every 3 seconds. Right, the great football songbooks. Next, you had your team kick it off, didn't you? The Blades, you enjoy yesterday?
It was great, yeah, very good. Yeah, very nice. It was in full voice. The old Chip Butty song, start, middle and end of the match as well, which is always nice that. Yeah,
happy
really.
Days.
Yeah,
not really fancy this year. But next, it's one of the most unlikely we'll ever do in the great football song, but because it's Bristol Rovers and it's Goodnight Irene, and how that song managed to get from the 1800s on the terrace in Bristol is unbelievable. It's a lovely story. Pat Nevin and Ian Holloway do it with us next here on Sunday mornings on Five Live. James Gregg will have the sports headlines first, and Dina Campbell is here with your news.
The voice of the UK
and the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Thanks, Colin. Angela Rayner has defended a number of gifts given to the Labour leadership, insisting the system for donations is transparent. The Deputy Prime Minister denies breaking parliamentary rules while staying in an apartment belonging to the Labour donor Lord Alley during a holiday in New York. At least four people have died and dozens have been injured in a mass shooting in the US state of Alabama. Multiple gunmen opened fire on a crowd in a popular entertainment area in the city of Birmingham on Saturday night. State media in Iran says an explosion caused by a gas leak at a coal mine in the east of the country has killed at least 51 people. More than 20 others have been injured after the blast in South Khorasan province. The CPS says it considered bringing charges against the former Harrods owner Mohammed Al-Fayed twice. The CPS says on both occasions it concluded there was no realistic prospect of a conviction. Dozens of women have come forward with allegations of being sexually assaulted or raped by the billionaire who died last year. Sport now with James Gregg.
Dina, thank you very much indeed. A real biggie this afternoon, isn't it? Here on BBC Radio 5 Live, the 1-2 from the last couple of seasons. Lockhorns later at the Etihad, Manchester City hosting Arsenal. So early in the campaign, isn't it? But it does have that big game feel. So many different talking points. Erling Haaland has scored 9 goals in 4 Premier League games so far this campaign for City. How does the Arsenal manager, Mikel Arteta, plan to stop him?
Well, we always obviously look at the individuals, the biggest strength that they have, and how we can nullify that and expose them in the areas that we can. That's for sure. Like, no difference.
You can hear Manchester City versus Arsenal from 4:30 here on 5 Live, right after Brighton versus Nottingham Forest at 2. Steve Crossman, with all the build-up with the team from 12, they will be based at the Etihad Stadium. The same two sides do battle in the WSL today as well. The two sides have had varying fortunes in the Women's Champions League in midweek, with City winning 5-0, Arsenal having lost a goal to nil, but the City manager, Gareth Taylor, doesn't really reckon that will have any influence today.
I don't think so, no. We'll both be preparing as we were, regardless of what happened on Wednesday night. I think probably the implications are more for the following game after next Thursday's game. I think that's where it becomes a little bit more significant.
You can listen along and follow it on the BBC Sports website on the loud text page. Elsewhere, Anthony Joshua says he will continue to box despite losing his heavyweight world title fight to fellow Brit Daniel Dubois. He knocked Joshua out in round 5 at Wembley, having knocked him to the canvas several times in the early rounds.
Yeah, I think, you know what it is, before I came here, I'm always saying to myself, I'm a fighter for life. We rolled the dice at success and we came up short. and we roll it again, innit? If you know what I mean? We keep rolling the dice.
Well, you can head to BBC Sounds for the latest edition of the Five Live Boxing Podcast with Steve Bunce and guests, including Frank Warren, AJ and Dubois himself. England's cricketers will have to turn around a 2-0 deficit if they are to win their five-match ODI series against Australia. England were beaten by 68 runs at Headingley yesterday. Harry Brooks been captaining the side in the absence of Joss Butler.
We've just got to keep on doing what we said we're going to do, really. Keep coming hard and, yeah, and hopefully it comes off one game, and yeah, and we, like I said before, we're all having a lot of fun out there still. Even though we've lost the first couple of games, we, yeah, we're still enjoying it.
Italy's Matteo Manassero leads the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. The resurgent star once again showed his remarkable form. He carded a brilliant third round yesterday, a 9-under-63. He sits at 18 under par, and he has a nice healthy cushion over Billy Horschel and Rory McIlroy by 3 shots.
I have a better perspective about golf and being in a top of leaderboards, but it's never that comfortable. It's not easy to compete against such a high level in tough conditions. It's not easy.
There'll be a TV highlight show later on BBC Two of that and the iPlayer as well. Lando Norris will start the Singapore Grand Prix from pole position this afternoon with the World Championship leader Max Verstappen next to him on the front row. McLaren driver Norris is 59 points behind Verstappen with 7 races remaining. There'll be commentary on Five Sports Extra from 12:45. And the Wimbledon champion Carlos Alcaraz has criticised the congested tennis calendar, saying they're going to kill us in some way. He's currently playing at the Laver Cup in Berlin, which is his 14th tournament of the year. Team World lead Europe by 8-4 going into the final day of that match today. That is the latest from BBC Sport. You can listen at any time on your smart speaker by saying play BBC Sports News.
BBC Five Live, the voice of the UK.
With Colin Murray.
Welcome back, everybody. Sunday mornings on Five Live. This is the Colin Murray Show. And while we will continue the build up to our Sunday of football from 11, we'll pick it up again. We're going to settle in now for the 6th installment of a feature that has so far hit the right note each and every week. We may have already, or eventually will hopefully get around to your team, but it doesn't matter who you support when it gets to 10:30 on a Sunday morning. So far, we visited the Blades, Forest, Man City, Hibernian and Leeds United. But this next track takes us as far south as we've been so far. It is time to add another track to our great football songbook. Let's do this. Right, it's time to head down another one of football's musical rabbit holes. And with me all the way for every single great football songbook is the echo to my Bonnie Man, the divine to my comedy, the death cab to my cutie, the only footballer who, while everyone else in the dressing room was discussing offsides, he was listening to B-sides. It's Pat Nevin.
You're stretching it, but I'm liking it. You're still getting there. You've got a week to do every one of them, so I'll give you that. Yeah, to be honest, this is brilliant, but this week's a bit weird, isn't it? Let's be honest about it.
And we're actually going to start with the origin of the song, because the Great Football Songbook takes us to Bristol Rovers, and proof, by the way, that we're led by your texts and tweets that come in, because week one we got a message from a Bristol Rovers fan and straight away I said, yep, we'll do it in the next few weeks. And it goes all the way back to the early 50s in footballing terms, but much, much further in music terms. They sing Goodnight Irene, and my first thought, Pat, is exactly that, the darkest track I think we might ever put into the songbook.
Absolutely. Very, very strange, very unusual song. Certainly the lyrics, which we'll get into in a minute, were extraordinary. Mm. I have to say, when you first said we're going to do Goodnight Irene, I thought, do you mean Come On Eileen? But, you know, it's not, which would have been a much more obvious one to sing along to. But this has been going for a long, long time, as you say. You know, not just all the way back to at least 1950 with the club, but obviously it's a much, much older song than that as well.
Yeah. And that's where we bring in the original inverted commas. It's complicated. Stay with us. It's Lead Belly. And if you're not a big musical, don't worry about that at all. A virtuoso of the 12-string guitar. We're going right back to the beginning of the 1900s and the decades after. Just an amazing artist. There's a track in particular, In the Pines, which you'll know even though you might not know that you know. Nirvana's Where Did You Sleep Tonight. Kurt Cobain took the legacy of Lead Belly to another level. He was such a fan. And the reason why I say that it's a little bit complicated, there are stories that this goes all the way back into the 1800s and it had been passed down through generations before Lead Belly recorded it. But here it is. And the style's really, really important.
Irene, good night.
So off goes Lead Belly to sing lines like, I wish, dear Lord, that I'd never seen your face. I'm sorry you were ever born. And in fact, it finishes with, if Irene turns her back on me, I'm going to take morphine and die. It's a really dark folk song, Pat. Tell me what you found out about it.
Well, I found out that a more depressing band than Joy Division, and I didn't think that actually existed anywhere in the world. First of all, the song itself, as you correctly say, goes all the way back, and it does go back, I'm sure about that, before Lead Belly. And as a guy who's really important here, were a couple of people, John and Alan Lomax. Now, they were folk music, wait for this, folklorists, song hunters, and ethnomusicologists. Now, wow. If you do know about the history of that kind of music, he went out all over America trying to find these songs and these musicians before it died out, because he knew this was happening, but he had the recording equipment to take with him and keep all these songs. And while out there, he finds Lead Belly. You know, he's not the cleanest character in the world. He's been in and out of prison. He was supposed to do a 30-year stretch. And the argument is that he only got out of prison because, you know, he got pardoned, or not pardoned, but let out for good behaviour, but also because they took it to the governor, that song that you're singing, and he liked it. And on the strength of that, as well as his good behaviour, he got out of prison, and that was Lomax. So the Lomax is brilliant, brilliant story. Look into them if you possibly can. Great, Billy Bragg did a great program about them as well. Mm. However, after all of that, I don't think that's the reason why Bristol Rovers sing that song.
None to do, because we go to 1959 and the Weavers, we don't have time to do the history of the Weavers. During the Big Red Scare, the folk band the Weavers were on the list. They were on the FBI list. They were worried that they were going to bring communism to the United States. We can't even go there after Lead Belly, but they cleaned the track up. They took out references to morphine, not all the references, but they took out the darkest parts of the song, and it became a massive hit, not just in the US but here in the UK in 1950 and across the world. And this is where the story begins.
Irene, good night. Irene, good night. Good night, Irene. Good night, Irene. I'll see.
So the song is now a little bit more palatable for the mainstream. It's now crossing the Atlantic, probably being brought over in boats, by the way. It happened a lot. I mean, the Beatles talk about discovering rock and roll from sailors who had docked in Liverpool. So either way, big hit here. And that's where we can start piecing the story together, the Bristol Rovers connection on this, the great football songbook, our sixth installment, with someone who is such a gashead that when he managed Bristol Rovers, he wouldn't let the players drive red cars. I wish that was a joke, but it isn't. He supports them. He fled for them. He managed them. Ian Holloway is here. Hi, Ollie.
How are you, Colin? How are you, Pat?
So this track, Ollie, must be your most played of all time. It must have been with you your whole life.
Colin, it is. And I'm glad you've looked into it. If you think about what you're saying, It's horrendous. When you hear all the lyrics, last Saturday night I got married, me and my wife settled down. Now me and my wife are parted. I mean, that is the shortest relationship you've ever seen in your life. It's just not what you want your kids to do. But, oh, mate, it's been with us all the time and I've never known why, so I'm finding it really interesting. But it's quite morose, really.
Well, Ian Holloway, hang on to your hat because it's not entirely set in stone. And Pat and I have done our separate research. So let me tell a story and see whether Pat agrees. So I think Plymouth Argyle fans were maybe already singing it. And they came to play at what was then the Eastfield Stadium to take on Bristol Rovers. And they brought an accordion player with them who was playing Goodnight Irene beside the pitch, right? So anyway, they're 1-0 up in the game. They draw first blood and the Plymouth Argyle fans start singing Goodnight Irene to the Bristol Rovers fans. And then in 8 minutes of the second half, a crazy 8 minutes, the Gas score 3 goals and the entire ground taunts the Argyle fans by singing it back at them. Good night, Argyle. Good night, Argyle. And it scanned perfectly. Then from there, it became the club anthem. This is just one of several stories out there. But Pat, that's the one I settled on. What about you?
I'm kind of going for it as well because lots of things seem to tie in. That song, you know, unless you're, you know, a Rovers fan, it may well be new to you because it's not lasted that well in certain areas of music. However, like other standards have, it's a standard, but other standards have probably lasted better and you hear them and you know them much better. However, at that precise time, they just sold 2 million copies. It was absolutely at its height as a song. So the timing fits in perfectly to that story as well. And by the way, it's a great story on top of it, which is brilliant to hear. But and the other thing which I would underline is, and I think most football fans have got this, I remember this happening when I was younger, at Celtic games and Rangers fans had certain songs. And if they were having a nightmare, Celtic fans would take their tune and rebound it back on them with abuse. Mm. And so this does happen in football and it does happen in lightning quick.
There's a little caveat I want to put into that, and it's not that important, but I feel like because we're doing a thing that's called the Great Football Song, but we have to put this level of respect because this track never, ever hit the charts here. But there is a version by Joe Stafford which scans into this version. So I don't know exactly what, but I think it was the, as you said, it was the Weavers one that did it. But I just want to mention that because it is there in some of the stories. And there's another game, Pat, which is the FA Cup quarter final against Newcastle United. And the rival fans even joined in. And that's connected to it as well. But I think, Ollie, sometimes the story that makes the most sense isn't the right answer. But that sounds as good as any to go with, Ollie, the idea that of Argyle coming to the old Eastfield Stadium. What do you think? It sounds about right, doesn't it?
Bang on, I think. And what we would have done would really rubbed it in. Funny enough, I've been at both clubs, so I know the rivalry, and that would have been massive at the time. So to steal their song and then goad them with it is total gas head fodder. I mean, that is what we do. We mimic, we joke, we know we're the underdogs, but we can't wait to let someone know if we're doing well. And it does sum it up, really.
It is perverse that it is the anthem, but I like it. And the idea of good night, Irene, as well, just the good night bit is, I like how condescending it is. And there's a bit of mockery always when you sing it in victory. But obviously, Bristol Rovers aren't on Super Sunday every day of the week. So finding recordings of it, I just want to thank one particular YouTube channel, Goodnight Irene BRFC, who just recorded it around all sorts of grounds and has put out like so many versions in 1 3-minute YouTube video. Thank you so much for it. This is lovely. This is just three runs through of it because I realise we haven't played it yet. This is what that track, that famous track with such history sounds like given the Bristol Rovers treatment.
Irene, good night, Irene. fans in the league. Maybe.
You know what? I love that guy at the end. You can hear him saying, best fans in the league. Maybe. This was a time when they won promotion, first time since joining the Football League in 1920, in 52-53. Highest ever league placings were 55-58 those seasons. So, Ollie, the 1950s team, sometimes a song needs a successful team to take off. And I'm sure, you know, as a fan, as a player and as a manager, Bristol Rovers, that team of the 50s and those players are still eulogised. Their pictures are still in the wall.
Mate, it still is. You know, one of them's got a street named after him, Georgie Peverbridge. Absolutely unbelievable. We had an England centre forward in our time as well, mate. So, unfortunately, we're not the most famous team in the world, but we think we are. You know how it is all around the country. But being from Bristol, I had to choose a team that I was going to follow, and it was Rovers. Rovers chose me. They told me the truth of how hard I should be, how hard I should work. If I wanted to make it, Bristol City told me I was going to be great. And my dad made me choose which team. And I went, well, how do they know how good I'm going to be? I better go with the fellow who tells me I might fail. So that was it, really. We, you know, underdogs. Gas Eds comes from the back of Eastfield. There was a huge gas tank. And I can't tell you what we call the Bristol City lot because you'd have to cut me off. You know what I mean? It is, you wouldn't believe the rivalry in our city. And I'm really proud of it. I'm never going to change. It is what it is, really, and Bristol fans know it. We put up with it, and we still haven't seen the Premier League. And, you know, hopefully we will one day, because kids of our area, we've got to leave our area to progress, and that shouldn't be right, you know. Hopefully someone will get there. But, you know, Irene, goodnight, Irene, is in our blood, and we're never going to change. It's, we were taught as Bristol Rovers players the whole song at one time, and we had to do it in front of our fans on the end of a season do. And
as a player, they made you learn, the whole squad had to learn the song to play in the shirt.
Yeah, it was all a thing. We had a fella called Gordon Bennett, his worst name in the world, but what a man. Honestly, he seriously made us into who we were. We had a youth department in Bristol and a youth department in Wales, and we had to play against each other every month. And it was inbred in you about what Bristol Rovers meant. And at the time, we had Eastfield, and as you walked in, we had the whole tiles were in the Bristol Rovers badge and colours. It was quite a strong club. Mm. It was all about your identity and what we stood for. It was all part of it. That was part of us. We had to believe that our club was the biggest and the best in the world. And Gordon Bennett did a brilliant job of it.
Well, first of all, you know, the realism from Ollie there, you know, but the reason why you choose the Rovers instead of City, it really does kind of mirror the song, doesn't it? You know, sometimes I live in the country, sometimes I live in the town, sometimes I have a great notion, jumping into the river and drown. No, you're right, it's not the cheeriest
thing. He needs some help, whoever was that. He was a Rovers fan and he used to watch us.
but Pat's just, as always, he sort of says when I'm starting to think and I'm trying to put it together into words, and Pat already has him. If we were coming on saying, here's Bristol Rovers song, and it was, we're going to show Bristol City what we say, and we're going to be walking down Wembley Way, you just wouldn't buy it. That's not the gas, Pat. That's not the gas. This type of song kind of works.
That is not us. You imagine a dark evening, you forget your coat, you go and watch your team, you're 2-0 down, and you've got no stand above you, so you're getting soaking wet. That's gas. That's what we are, but we still keep
singing.
That's
good night, Harry.
Yeah, and we'll still keep going. And this is the whole point, you know. That's why we are who we are. And even the kit's strange with quarters. How many teams do that? We just couldn't make our mind up where we wanted the blue and where we wanted the white, I think. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it fits, Pat. It fits.
Does the team, or does the club pick the song, or does the song pick the club? And I wonder about that sometimes.
It's a great choice.
Millions and millions of songs that they could have chosen, they chose that one. I'm not sure which way it is around.
I think that song chose us because it belonged to, if it's true, it belonged to Plymouth. We threw it back in their face and then it was ours. And that's us all over. That's ours now.
Yeah.
You know, it might have been yours, but we're taking it.
I like the idea of this, the magic of it, the folklore of it is that for whatever reason, fate brought this song to that side of pitch in 1950, being played on an accordion, and the rest is history because the fans had to connect to it. I love this version of it because, you know, it just times perfectly with a goal. So the video of this. What a lovely feeling for it to be interrupted that way. Ollie, what's your best memory of hearing it? Would it be in success? Would it be going back to, I think you won the third division in 89-90. What Good Night Irene pops into your head?
Mate, that is the one. Do you realise we actually beat our arch nemesis Bristol City at Twerton Park 3-0 and they were above us in the table at the time. That got us automatic promotion. We had one more game left of the season. So at Twerton Park, I took the penalty, the third goal. As that went in and I turned to run away, that song was being sung for the last 10 minutes. And it was almost at the top of their voice. And I have to say, City fans were not happy with our lot singing that song. But I'll never, ever forget it, mate. Ever. It was something else. Goosebumps even now. I still remember that moment. Songs take you back to that very, very time. And I literally have goosebumps now, mate. It's brilliant. Wonderful feeling.
Long may it ring out, and forever it will ring out. There's no question, is there, that the song would change our fans, the new generations would move on. And Ollie, that's what makes Goodnight Irene so special and such an important part of our great football songbook. This track goes back to the 1800s, yet there's 16-year-old kids who are singing it today.
Mate, it is part of your upbringing. If you're a Bristol Rovers fan,
it's such a special tune. Ian Holloway, thank you so much for coming on. No bigger gas head, I know, to just mark Goodnight Irene and put it into the songbook. But I have to ask you just one question before you go. You never met a tea lady called Irene, did you, at Bristol Rovers? Because that's one of the other stories about where the song comes from. I'm not buying it. And if there was, you would know.
No, there wasn't. No, our most famous tea lady was, oh, good gracious me, she found Nigel Martin. Vi Harris, her name was. So definitely not having that. She actually got us a million-pound goalkeeper on holiday, mate. There you go. That's how wonderful our tea lady was.
And she wasn't true. Called Irene. Said, good to clear that up.
You played so well, Bristol Rovers. You should go up for a trial. So he came up. We signed Nigel Martin. There you go.
Brilliant.
Thank you, Ollie.
Thank you, boys. Brilliant. Great to speak to you. Good luck to you. Thanks, Pat.
Speak soon. Take care, Ollie.
Loved it. Pat, another one goes into the book. Six in. How many of these do you think we're going to do? Because when we talked before it started, we were saying, well, if we do it for 20-odd weeks, that'll be good. I'm thinking way beyond that now.
I'm already looking at German teams. I'm moving abroad now. I'm ready to, because some of the stuff you get abroad, and I'm sure I'm not the only one to start, and it's something people have done before, but I can remember being at the Euros there, and one of the clubs over there sings a beautiful old Scottish lilting tune in German. And honestly, this is brilliant, and it can go anywhere. There's 90-odd clubs, and by the way, I've hardly even touched Scotland yet.
Exactly, just the hip so far. Well, listen, we're not going to Germany next week, but we are going here. Yeah, it's happening. Look, this is the greatest thing, right? Literally 20 seconds left of that feature. Someone texted in. I'm assuming Bubbles will be on the Great Football Songbook at some stage. Turn it up. Let's take this bit. Here we go. Here we go. I That's next week. I contest, right, that that song does not work in any other accent other than West Ham fans. That's what I think. No other team should have ever sang this, but I'll find out. So that's next week. But this week was Bristol Rovers. I want to give Carl a big shout out. I know he's been waiting for that. And thank you to everyone that's been sending in all the other versions. Ry Cooter, Eric Clapton, Chaz and Dave. And I love this. The Rovers fans singing a version of it. Maximum Rover Drive. So thank you for sending all that in. And as always, the songbook seems to just be such a thing that pulls us together and gets us chatting. And when we say this is not a top flight feature, we absolutely mean it. I'm hoping in the next 3 or 4 weeks we can get a Chesterfield historian to come on, because they sing Sailing even though there's no, they're not on the coast. So I want to know why that happens and all sorts of stuff. We get Norwich coming up and Bristol City fans, do not worry. We're going to do the lot. So the Red, Red Robin will come bobbing along at some stage. But next week will be West Ham. Let's put that behind us now. Let's turn our attentions to the second part of the show, which is really looking forward to today's football. We're doing Man City Arsenal and Arsenal Man City. How are you doing that, Cole? Have you lost your mind? No, they're playing in the Premier League and the WSL. Those two teams have sold out the Etihad and the Emirates. How amazing is that? We're also going to talk to a Forest legend, Viv Anderson. Thank you for all your messages coming in. Pete Merseyside loving the boxing. Simon loving the Saburio. He plays his brother-in-law every Boxing Day. Wolves against Newcastle United. Magic. Back after Dina's
Voice
News.
Of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, says she doesn't believe she broke any rules when she stayed in the New York flat of a Labour donor. Ms Rayner has told the BBC that donations are part of politics and the government was open and transparent about the process. Chris Philp is the shadow leader of the Commons.
There are 650 MPs and he has accepted far more freebies than any other MP, and frankly, accepting free clothes and luxury designer goods for his wife frankly strikes me as just a bit weird and, to be honest, inappropriate as well. No Conservative Prime Minister or leader was giving out Downing Street passes or civil service positions to donors. That is terrible.
Police in the US state of Alabama say at least 4 people have been shot dead. The attack by multiple gunmen took place in a crowded area of the city of Birmingham last night. Israel has come under attack from at least 100 rockets fired by Hezbollah in Lebanon, as well as drones launched by a pro-Iranian group in Iraq. The Israeli army says some of the rockets were intercepted, but the missiles are reported to have come down further into Israel than before. Meanwhile, state media in Iran says an explosion caused by a gas leak at a coal mine in the east of the country has killed at least 51 people. More than 20 others have been injured after the blast in South Khorasan province. Germany's far-right AfD party could win a second regional election today in the state of Brandenburg, which surrounds Berlin. Opinion polls have shown it with a narrow lead over the centre-left Social Democratic Party of Chancellor Olaf Scholz, which has governed the state since German reunification in 1990. Allied soldiers who died 80 years ago in one of the most famous battles of the Second World War are being remembered at the British War Cemetery in Oosterbeek in the Netherlands. Thousands of Allied troops parachuted into Nazi-occupied territory as part of an offensive called Operation Market Garden. Our correspondent Anna Holligan has more.
You know, some of the graves in this cemetery are tended to by local school children to try and ensure that that legacy lives on, those stories live on.